Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org, and we're funded by the great Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can find out more about the PNWA at pnwa.org. See, not much going on right now I need to tell you about. I know next month, if you live in the Seattle area, I will be teaching a class at the East West Bookshop called, it's a three-week class, actually, called Writing as a Spiritual Practice. I think it starts on December 5th, runs every week. So if you're interested in that, you can check it out at the East West Books website, or you can go to williamknauer.com. You can find out about that, or about if you want to work with me as a little one-on-one coaching, or if you'd like to have me come speak to your writing group or writer's organization. And as always, if you want to keep a little bit of writer's inspiration on your bedside, go out there and pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, an author's companion, available where fine books are sold. You know, writing stories and writing is often about change. Our characters are always changing. We write stories about ourselves. It's always about how we've changed and how we've learned. And so I always love to hear stories of people's lives and how they change and how things have changed for them. And today's guest, Kitty Pilgrim, went through quite a change, actually. Now, you may recognize her name from the television. She was a correspondent and an anchor on CNN for 24 years, but you may also recognize her from the dust jackets of her books. She's the author of two novels, The Explorer's Code, which came out in 2011, and Stolen Chalice, which was released in hardback in 2012 and paperback in 2013. She's made a little switch from journalist to novelist, but why? Why make that change? It's a very good question. It's a very interesting question, and it's one I hope she'll answer when she's on with me today. Kitty, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me, Bill.
It is my pleasure. So, all right. You were a journalist for 24 years. Is that true?
That is exactly right. Yep. Worked my way up from the very bottom of the pile to the very top. So I went from production assistant on the overnight shift to primetime anchor. So I pretty much did every single job in the entire building at CNN at one point.
Holy smokes. So you must have, I mean, you must have liked it. You must have been interested and curious. And were you like on your high school newspaper?
No. I went into journalism because I studied Russian, and the Soviet Union was collapsing, and I ended up, you know, reporting on that. So I went into journalism sort of by accident, but that I had the skill set that was needed at the time. So,
wow. So it was not an ambition of yours?
It wasn't particularly. I was headed towards maybe a career in diplomacy or something international. And then when I heard that Ted Turner was going to do the first global network in English, that was really international, and I thought, wow, that's actually going to do a lot for international relations, and will be in a new sort of a new cutting edge sort of thing, and it really was intriguing, and so I went to the New York office and begged for an interview, and there were only 35 people in the company at the time, and most people didn't know what CNN was. And I, you know, signed on, and they said, the only thing we can give you is overnight shift, production assistant. I had a master's degree from Columbia University. I said, okay, I'll take it.
Oh, that's great. All right, but you took it on. So, and what about it, once you were actually doing it, and you actually became a journalist, and you actually were going out into the field, what about it kept your interest? What kept you there for 24 years?
Well, the whole thing about my personality is I love people. I really love talking to people. And so that's what a journalist's job is. Of course, we write, but most of the day you spend talking to people and finding out what the story is. And, you know, I was able to do that at CNN on a global scale. So that's just really, really appealed to me. So you know, you walk around and talk to people all day, and then at the end of the day, you write something on deadline really quickly. And the whole thing just really suited my personality. So I thrived. I mean, I really thrived at it. And, you know, and when you love what you're doing, you succeed. So I must say that I did succeed very well.
And, you know, I just talked to actually, your interview's up on the magazine right now. Katie Hafner, who just published the memoir Mother, Daughter, Me, but her career, and she still is, works at the New York Times, and she was a freelance journalist, but she works at the Times now. And so she got her chops doing journalism. And we were talking about that one of the great challenges of journalistic work is you have to tell a story. You can't, yes, you're reporting the facts, but you have to shape it. It seems to me, in print or in broadcast, you have to shape it into a narrative so that the audience, because we grasp things in narratives. And so you are always having to take a big thing and try and reduce it to something understandable. Is that right?
It is. But, you know, for print journalists, it's one thing. For a broadcast journalist, it's really pure narrative, because the question that you're asking as a broadcast journalist is, what happened? And that's a pretty quick tell. We were driving down the road and this flood came in. It's a very quick tell. And so it's all narrative pretty much in broadcast journalism. And so I don't think that it's that hard to actually switch from broadcast journalism, to novel writing. It isn't that hard.
Well, and that's just what you did. So, all right, so you're cruising along. You're at CNN. And what happened? What happened to you? Where did this novel come from? And had you been secretly writing some fiction, or what happened?
Not at all. I mean, the answer is not at all. I hadn't even occurred to me. But what happens when you're a TV correspondent on a national scale or a global scale is you spend a lot of time in airports. And so as you run through an airport, you always grab a paperback. You must grab a paperback, because they're going to hold your plane on the tarmac and you're going to get stuck and you're not going to be able to turn on your electronic devices, and you need a paperback in your hand. So I would always grab a paperback. And what I noticed was that I either had to grab a thriller, a sort of helicopter, gunship, chase, car chase, mail-oriented, shoot the bad guy thriller, or I had to pick a romance. Like a, you know, plucky young woman moves to big city, meets Mr. Right romance. And what I wanted was both together in the same book. And so one night after my broadcast, I was a primetime anchor at that point. I had about an hour commute every night. I decided to try to write one that I would like, because I was tired of looking for the book that didn't exist. So I wrote a combination of those two things. And it has lots and lots of action and lots of romance.
All right. So I am now going to lay some praise here at your door, and I'll tell you why. I love what you just said, and whenever I go around, I talk to a lot of writers and talk to them about writing, and the one piece of advice I give them again and again is write the book you wish was on the bookshelf.
Yeah.
Write the thing.
I think that's true.
That you aren't seeing, because that is your... So much of writing is intuitive, is emotional, can't be planned out, and that is that part of you guiding you towards what you can do well, because you are seeing the value in that combination of things, of suspense and romance. You did it exactly right, Kitty.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when I showed it to people here in New York and publishers, they said, you know, you've actually got like a niche, a genre that doesn't really exist. And I said, well, I know, because I couldn't find it. So, and I also put in a lot of my own personal interests. So all my books have a sort of subject that's based in exploration. And all of my books are global in scope. So there's like four or five locations in every book. So I put in a lot of me in the book. And, you know, I was living a fairly unique life, and so I think that it really colored the product that I wrote, because, you know, very few people had the opportunity to travel and experience as much as I had at you know, when I started this book. So I think it's quite unique.
Well, you're able to bring some verisimilitude to it because you had been to the places that you were writing about, and you could go visit them again.
Right, and
I
still do that.
Not every writer can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still do that. I go to all the places in my books first before I write the scene. So,
wow.
For example, in The Explorer's Code, the finale's in the high Arctic. I went there. I wanted to feel what it was like. In The Stolen Chalice, the finale's in Cairo. I went there. I go to where the scenes take place, so I know what it's like.
All right, but it's one thing to read a bunch of novels on an airplane and think, I want this. I want some romance and suspense. And then it's another thing altogether to actually do it. There's, especially if you haven't spent some years kind of figuring certain things out. So what was the biggest challenge for you in going from writing journalistically to writing creatively?
Well, there was one thing. When you write journalistically, you withhold emotion from the report. Because you must withhold. You're seeing terrible things. You're reporting on terrible things. And you can't start to gush. You have to be factual.
Right.
You have to be dispassionate. So I had a little bit of a hard time letting myself gush emotionally through my characters. But it wasn't that bad because I'm a real human being and I really do have feelings. So it wasn't that awful to try to unleash that a little bit. But I actually didn't find the technique all that difficult because of the structure of my novel, which I think is kind of unique, although I see other people doing it. I wrote them each scene as I pictured it, and so that's almost like a news package. And so each scene runs about 1.5 pages to 2 pages long, and it's exactly as how I envisioned it. And so I just wrote a series of scenes that just kept going the way I pictured the story unfolding, and that's how I structured the novel. I didn't have like plot point one and the finale and all that. I just didn't have that in my head. I just told the story in terms of scenes until I was done telling the story.
Oh, now this is interesting. I would have picked you as a outliner, but you're saying you did not outline it.
No, I did not.
Oh,
no.
You just started writing what you saw, wait a minute. So, for instance, with the Explorer's Code, your first. What did you begin with? What did you have to start? What did you know about the story before you began it?
I knew I had an oceanographer who was a young girl. She's in her early 20s. And she's had a very rough childhood. Her parents were killed. And she was raised basically by going by her family lawyer who had the trust fund and sent her to schools. And actually the money ran out. And the lawyer was chipping in basically to get her through school. And she becomes a very dedicated oceanographer. So I had Cordelia Stapleton, who's buried in her work, a little bit like me, just obsessed with her work, obsessed with what she's doing, how important it is. And she gets an invitation to go to Monaco to attend a very fancy gala to honor her great-great-grandfather, who was a famous polar explorer. I started with that. And
you had
it
that.
Pulls her, I had that in my head, and it pulls her out of her comfort zone and puts her in an unbelievably glamorous setting and sort of gets her off base a little bit. And that's what I started with. And then what happens to Cordelia after that is astonishing. So that's what I started with.
Had you, in the course of your professional life, had you been exposed to a lot of very glamorous settings?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, live in New York.
Yeah.
I spend a lot of time at galas. I wear a lot of evening gowns. I do spend a lot of time in very nice, fancy, resorts and places, and I can easily tap into that. And, it's not a tough life. I do live the life that I write about in my books. So when they're on boats, I'm on boats. When they're, in Paris, I'm in Paris. So I do actually have the advantage of living the life of my characters, so that does help you get it right.
Well, it does, because there's nothing like knowing what it feels like to stand on a boat and actually feel the and be able to draw upon those sensory details. And there's just a certain thing that you can bring to it that the imagination, I don't think, can conjure.
I think I would have a very hard time sitting in a room and writing a book. And I know plenty of writers who do it, and I think they're enormously talented. But I am a reporter, and so I go, I look, I see, I feel, and I write it down. And that's how I write my books, and that's how I always wrote my news stories. And that's the only way I can do it. If they actually locked me in a room and said, come up with a fantastic plot, I probably would have a hard time.
Oh, interesting. All right, well, so you said you like to talk to people, and so these books are published by Simon & Schuster, and they publish them in hardback. Did they send you out on a book tour?
I did it. I do book tour, and I also spend a lot of time just traveling myself, talking to my readers. So what I'll do is connect with a book club and offer to speak to them, and then they have a little cocktail party or a tea party, and they'll tell me what they thought was interesting in the book, and I'll get a lot of feedback from people about what they thought was interesting, because there's so many plot lines in the book. There's a few levels. There's the romance level. There's the scientific exploration level. There's the travel level. So certain people connect with certain things. And so I like to hear from my readers what they like, what they don't like, what really struck them. And it's very interesting to set up those sort of dialogues. So I've been doing that quite a bit, been around the country doing that quite a bit with different groups. And as I write, then I start to get to know what my readership is. So it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And that's not something that my publisher set up. That's something I do personally.
And who is your readership? Were you surprised by who your readership is, or did they feel like you? Did they feel very different than you? What was that like? Who are they?
Yeah,
who
it's
are these
interesting.
People?
Yeah, it is really interesting, because you have one idea of what your readership is like, and then I would say that I wrote the book with the intention of having, or the series, with the intention of having, mostly I thought women would read it because of Cordelia, although there is a male who's very, he's an archaeologist, and there are very male elements in these books, and men do like them. But I had in my head that it was a woman's book to begin with, and so I had in my head that it was a sort of busy professional woman, or a woman who has, a lot of homemaker duties with children, and that she would read the book in between, commuting or in between soccer practice. And I wrote very short chapters so that she could, pick it up and put it down. And I had this sort of person in my head. I also wrote it very clean. It's a very clean book. It's not, it's something you could share with, say, your 22-year-old daughter or your 70-year-old mom. And so I wanted it to be a three-generation book, so that the women could share it with, and you could have a conversation, granddaughter to grandmother, about it and not have any embarrassment. That was my basic concept. And as I go around and talk to, different groups, I'll draw in sometimes very, 20-somethings, or I'll draw in, like, a retired community, a book club. And I think I've achieved my sort of goal of getting the books to span the generations. And because they are so global in plot, that it's bringing like new discussions to the women, to my readership. A lot of women connect with the glamorous elements in the book, of course, but a lot of other women love the travel and the science. I interview scientists basically for my research. And so a lot of the women are connecting to the science theme, which I find very, very exciting.
Isn't it interesting? Authors go through this all the time, especially early in their career, that this thing that you wrote in private goes out. And I don't think – I would suspect that as a broadcast journalist this was not such the case, that it goes out and has this life of its own and reaches people in ways I suspect you couldn't have predicted, like you said about the science, for instance. I'm continually amazed by it with my own work, and many of the authors I talk to share that, which is that, I wanted it to happen, and then when it does happen, it's still surprising.
Yeah, it is. It's really fun for me. And, you know, I'm going to places in the, like I went to Chicago just over the summer to talk to some book clubs and a professional women's association. And, you know, I'd never really been to suburban Chicago, so it was a whole new experience. And then I talked to a retired community up in Massachusetts, and, you know, I'm like meeting different segments of the population that I wouldn't normally interact with. And women I wouldn't normally sit around a living room having tea and cake with and talking about life. It's really, really rewarding. And that has nothing to do with literature. That's just sharing, which is really, really nice. So it's brought me into another world.
Well, invariably, when we start talking about books, we end up talking about ourselves, because the characters, the reader sees themselves in the story. They live it through themselves, and invariably a conversation about a book, hopefully even, will, just as you say, become a conversation about our lives. And actually, speaking of which, you and I were chatting briefly before the show started, and you described that moment when you had an agent, or you'd gotten in, I guess you had written the first the first book, and you'd sent it to an agent, and he or she, I'm not sure who it was.
It's Moore Shanklin. Oh yeah, sure,
I know. And he said, "This is really good. You should think about switching careers." So, what was that like for you? I mean, that you'd spent a long time toiling away at CNN. Was that a hard switch? Was that a big discussion you had to have with whomever?
Well, it was kind of a funny conversation, because I sent him the manuscript, and I didn't really think it was. You know, I thought it was amusing. I liked it, but I don't know. I didn't know if it was commercial or not. But I knew this agent in New York, so I sent it to him. And I sent it to him on a Friday, and he called me on a Monday and said, we should have lunch. And I thought, oh, he hated it. I mean, that's like way too quick.
No,
I thought, wow, he's going to be very polite, take me to lunch to tell me he hates it. And so we had lunch, and he said, I think you should think about doing this professionally and really start to think about this. And I said, well, you know, I'm a primetime anchor on, you know, so we had this discussion. He said, you know, he made a big pitch about how it would be so much fun, and I, you know, I thought about it, and I went home. I have two sons. I was a single mom, and I had two sons who were in college, and I said, guys, I'm thinking of quitting my job as a journalist and becoming a, you know, novelist, maybe writing romantic thrillers. And they went, oh my God, Mom, you need a vacation. You're delusional. And they pitched a fit. They said, you need to take a break. You know, so I said, no, I'm serious about this. I really want to try this. And so they were highly skeptical. So I don't know if you know this, but in TV, you have like a 3-year contract. And so they renew your contract every 3 years, and you have the option to not renew it or renew it or whatever. And I had a 3-year contract cycle coming up, and I thought, you know what? Let's just wing it. They did offer me a contract, and I said, you know what? I'm going to do the books. So it was a big decision, but I did it with joy, because it was something I wanted to do, and I thought it would be really, really fun. So I just took the
leap. But that's a huge wow. But it's so, because when you wrote it, you weren't writing it with the intention of like, I need a new career. You just thought you'd take a crack at it.
Yeah, but I enjoyed doing it so much. I really would look forward to sitting down and writing it. And so what I found after I left the news business is that I had a whole day to do what I really, really wanted to, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the news business is really fun and really, you know, it's an adrenaline rush from the beginning of the day to the end, and there's nothing that can really replace the joy of being in, like, the news. But, you know, this is like a different, gentler, more thoughtful day for me, and I was ready to sort of take back a little bit of my time and enjoy my day a little bit. And now I don't have a deadline. I had a 5:30 deadline for 24 years.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Wow. Well, but so you discipline wasn't going to be a problem for you.
No. No.
But it's nice. The nice thing about the novel writing is that you are allowed, I always think, you're allowed the privacy to get in touch with what interests you. You know, that yeah. you're allowed the quiet of the desk to say, what does Kitty Pilgrim actually want to say about this subject in some way or another? Then sometimes the hurly-burly of, certainly I've never worked in a newsroom, but I can well imagine that it's an intensely
intense.
Public experience.
Yeah, it's intense. But, you know, I also wanted to just, when I write, give a lot of glamour and romance. I think people are too consumed with, you know, really depressing, demanding, negative things. And I wanted to write really beautiful, enjoyable novels that people would really like to put their feet up, take out a box of chocolates, and just enjoy the afternoon or enjoy the evening, enjoy their free time, and share that with them. Because I'd shared so much bad news that I sort of wanted to give back a little bit in the pleasure department and, you know, have people read beautiful, fun, uplifting things. So that's enjoyable to me.
And that must have been sort of what you were looking for as you were filling those empty hours, traveling from one catastrophic event to the other, needing something that could provide some escape.
Yes, it is. It's entirely escapist, my novels. I mean, you know, you're going from yachts to galas to, you know, it's fun all the way. And it was entirely escapist for me. And everyone who reads it says, I want to live in your world. It's very funny because
right.
Will you please write another book? I want to live in your world. So it's fun.
But do you want to live in that world?
Oh, yeah. It's
a
beautiful world. It's a world where, you know, people are intelligent and try to do the right thing. You know, it's a very beautiful world.
All right, well, Kitty, I want you to answer. I got time for one more good question here for you.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'd like you to do is finish this sentence for me.
All
Maybe
right.
we'll say a little bit afterwards. But finish the sentence. If writing, I mean now probably fiction writing, but if writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
It's taught me to go out in the world and see everything I can see.
Taught you to see everything you can see. Now, you're already seeing a lot. How did fiction writing teach you that?
Because I'm seeing new things. Like, for example, I just went to England to look at some archaeological samples that I never would have come across in the news business, which I'll now incorporate in a new book. I'm going to places like the Arctic or, you know, down in an Egyptian tomb, which wouldn't have been in the course of my news career. So I'm going to even more interesting, more exotic places than I've ever been.
Isn't that fascinating? You had already lived a life that was probably more exotic and far-reaching than many people's, and yet the novel writing career has taken you even further. Who would have
even
that?
Farther, yeah. I was out this summer mapping the seabed floor with an oceanographer for an upcoming book. I do really incredible things for these books, and it's almost like my characters give me permission to do anything. I just got my scuba certificate to do diving because my character's an oceanographer. It's like she gave me permission to do that. It's really fun.
That's awesome. That is awesome. Well, Kitty, thank you. This has been a delightful 30 minutes. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. That's great.
And it is, again, everybody, it's The Stolen Chalice and The Explorer's Code. Get it where all fine books are sold. Kitty, good luck, and I can't wait for the next one to come out. Let us know, okay?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's on its way.
All right. Good luck with it. And everybody out there, remember, see, Kitty, she's been all over the place. Then she becomes a novelist and she goes even further. So let your imagination, let what you love take you where you want to go. It will do that. You will be guided. Until next week, all I could say is write what you love, do what you love who you love, and I'll tell you what, you really can't go wrong. No, you can't. Take care, everybody.